From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Y. I'm Shai Benyakov. Last week, you may have seen people on social media telling you to delete your apps, specifically ride-hailing apps Uber and Lyft. With hashtags like Uber Lyft Strike and Uber Shutdown, drivers in Philadelphia and in cities across the world were calling on passengers and drivers not to use the services for a day, protesting what they say are unfair labor practices.
Basically, they want better pay and better working conditions, more transparency.
Plan Philly reporter Daryl C. Murphy talked to some Philadelphia drivers involved in the protest, like
Jahandad Guman.
He's a driver for Uber Black.
I've been driving a long time, over 30 years in the Philadelphia region.
Before that, he was driving for a taxi. Then he decided to switch over. He said things were pretty good in the beginning, but, you know, things have changed and I guess have gotten progressively worse.
Right now, you even don't understand how much money they take. They're supposed to be taking the 25%, but it doesn't. It seems like more than 25% they take it from you for no idea why. That's why we are here.
You know, one of the things he says was he can make about $100 to $120 a day, but after expenses, you know, we're talking about, you know, your car wash,
commercial insurance, car payment, gasoline, 3-4 time wash inside, outside in the car, your own expense.
And after expenses, it doesn't amount to much.
What kind of car is this?
It's a Cadillac XTS.
Got it.
Drivers have been complaining about Uber's labor practices for years. But the timing of this protest was strategic. It took place just 2 days before Uber debuted on the stock market, valued at nearly $80 billion.
The drivers feel like they've invested so much time to make Uber what it is. Yet over the years, Uber, in their eyes, has treated them worse and worse, right? Now the company is about to start trading on the stock market for billions and billions of dollars. And, you know, drivers feel like they deserve a piece of that.
So some drivers turned off their apps, while others protested at Uber headquarters near Philadelphia International Airport. They had a few demands, like they want the company to take a smaller cut of their fares.
They wanted an 80-20 fare split. That means whatever the rider pays, they want 80%, Uber takes 20%. Also, they would like a minimum wage of $20 per hour after their expenses. They feel like that would incentivize Uber to limit the amount of drivers on the road.
They also want an appeal process for when drivers are deactivated due to complaints from riders.
And they want to be able to negotiate fare changes and terms of service changes and that type of thing. I think they just want more of a seat at the table.
In a statement responding to the protest, Uber said drivers are at the heart of their service. But in an SEC filing, Uber said it expects driver dissatisfaction to increase, and that if it were to pay drivers like traditional employees, it would be less profitable than it is now. So why is Uber holding tight to its tense relationship with drivers? And could this protest be the latest milestone in a gig economy reckoning over contractor rights? Today on The Y, the gig is up. I spoke with lawyer Ryan Hancock from the firm Willig, Williams & Davidson in Philadelphia. He said that while we generally talk about the gig economy like it's a new thing, independent contractors have been around forever. What's new is the type of gig and the way workers find them.
The new gig economy, I think, is what you're talking about or asking me about.
Millions of Americans are part of what's known as the gig or sharing economy. Instead of a traditional full-time job, they piece together an income where and when they can.
And I think I would define it as sort of mediated through the phone or computer-based. You know, it's on demand and it's geographically bound.
And what kinds of jobs are we talking about? What kinds of services?
Yeah, well, job is service is probably the right word.
Good question.
Right? Well, we're talking anything from driving.
Uber was founded in 2010 by Travis Kalanick and Garrett Camp as an on-demand black car service.
To domestic care work, to babysitting, to, I mean, everything now can be found on app-based, like food delivery, right?
With the Grubhub delivery app, if you want it all, you can get it all.
But we also include Airbnb and stuff like that as well.
Say hello to Roadie. We're a faster, cheaper, friendlier way to get your stuff where it's going.
online marketplace TaskRabbit finds people willing to help with everyday work. The chores include assembling new furniture, washing dogs, running errands, and even waiting in a line.
So it's pretty wide encompassing.
Do we have any numbers on how many people are a part of the new gig economy, or how many people might be doing this for their full-time work as opposed to, you know, doing this off hours?
That's really difficult because the last time I looked, the Department of Labor had not really captured this data, right? It's really shifting and new.
Is it possible to get those numbers? Like, is it more difficult to capture this data?
I think it is, and that's part of the problem, right? And so that's what I think one of the biggest and best criticisms of the new gig economy is it's very difficult to find out what's going on, whether it's for a driver to find out what actually is their base wage to how these companies operate.
What's the advantage for companies to have a bunch of independent contractors rather than just hiring employees?
Well, the risks are shifted from them onto the backs of the worker themselves or the service provider, if you will. We're talking about, you know, those individuals must bear the cost of Social Security payroll taxes. They don't have access to workers' comp and possibly unemployment compensation.
What about healthcare? How does healthcare play into all this? You know, I'll just share an anecdote. I was walking to the coffee shop the other day, and I saw two bike riders. I think they were from Caviar or Grubhub, and they were – it's a very busy intersection. They were turning this corner. Both of them almost got hit by a car, and I was thinking, like, those guys are not getting insurance through those places. I don't know if they have insurance. Is that also, you know, a concern?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, like we said, if you're an independent contractor, you're in charge of your own healthcare costs. And of course, if people are relying on sort of new gig economy jobs, they generally can't afford healthcare. I mean, healthcare is really expensive, right? But if that driver or that bicyclist was hit, they're going to get service somewhere. And if they don't have healthcare, well, that's a cost on the consumer, right? It's a taxpayer. So in other words, it's another way that the taxpayer is subsidizing this sorts of new gig economy work.
What do you mean?
So I try to liken it a lot to the conversations we were having 20 years ago with Walmart, right? Which is they were paying their workers low wage. They're still paying their workers low wage. But the consumer was pretty happy because they were seeing real savings at the cash register, right? I mean, there was no doubt that they were actually benefiting from that model. But then when you actually walk away from the cash register and then you look at sort of its impacts when however many percentage of their workforce relies on food stamps, right, or government-paid health care, it's really we're paying that in the back end. So that $1 to $2 to $3 savings at the cash register is really being made up in public subsidies.
So we're seeing a similar thing now, like when you pay a little bit less for Uber and you just decide to do that instead of a cab, the savings are apparent right there, but when you walk away from
That's right.
Yeah. You know, we get the sense that part of the rise in the gig economy is sort of because of the availability of these jobs, that people are choosing to work gig jobs instead of going for a full-time job, and that is part of a generational or lifestyle trend.
Today's the 9-to-5 workday seem to be numbered, and it is millennials leading the attack. Many young people are moving to less traditional work, but
I mean, do you buy that?
No.
Why not?
I think because the traditional jobs are non-existent and they're forced onto these markets. And it's complicated because certain people do want to do it because of the availability, right? There's no doubt about that. But I think it's also important to say, you know, when we look at technology, we always hear that technology is advancing and creating jobs and this is one of the positive things. But if you're looking at the ride-sharing model, it's really not true, right? They're actually taking away good paying jobs. Like cab driving jobs were family sustaining jobs. They were able to send their kids to college. So it's taking away sort of better protected jobs and replacing them with more precarious jobs.
So this is just becoming what's available.
It's becoming what's available.
Yeah.
And one of those things that's really important, not only about taking away those existing jobs, but it also takes capital out of our local economy, right? So it shifts the capital to venture capitalists in, say, California or tech people in California versus a majority of those wages and those taxes, et cetera, staying here in our local economy.
Is it harder to organize for those workers to organize to, you know, fight for their rights when you're an independent contractor like an Uber driver?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, because you're not in a traditional workplace, right? And so you don't have sort of a place in which you can go and collectively talk about workplace grievances. I mean, I think what you're seeing a lot of change about that, and people are purposely trying to meet each other to talk about these things, whether it's through other apps, for example, or social media.
So we saw this Uber strike last week. Why is it a big deal? Why do you think we should be paying attention to it?
I do think that this is a blueprint for larger actions and a call to action. So one, if we can deal with this now, it will maybe help create a vision of how we can remove some of the inequities. But I also think it's important because it serves as a model for other people in the new gig economy, right? So if you're looking at domestic workers or you're looking at deliveries of caviar, for example, food service deliveries, it gives a model to do it. But also I think it does another good job of raising awareness to consumers about sort of their impacts with their dollar, right? And their choices, their consumer choices have some impact beyond, hey, this was really affordable.
What do you think are some solutions to kind of some of the issues that were raised in this protest?
Wow. You know, if I'm looking at some of the ways that we can address it, one is I think that we just need to have robust and open dialogue with data, right? We need to be able to have access to it. Cities and states need to be able to look at and research the, sort of these impacts. The city of Philadelphia, in conjunction with several other organizations, have created the Gig Economy Working Group to sort of study the impacts, because before you can really prescribe ideas around how we can mediate some of the negative consequences of it, we really need to understand really fully what the problems are.
Ryan, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you for having me.
Pennsylvania State Senator Anthony Hardy Williams has convened a hearing to air some of the driver's issues. It'll be held later this month. The Y is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, Jen Kinney, Kelsey Hansen, and Xavier Lopez, with editorial direction from Katie Culinary. Send a tweet at Shai Ben-Yaakov. We'll be back tomorrow.